Thank you so much for joining us for this week's Tech Law 10. I'm Jonathan Armstrong at Duane Morris. I'm normally speaking to you from London, but today I'm here in Calgary in Canada. But Eric, you're still where you ought to be in California.
I am in San Francisco momentarily before I head to Las Vegas for the rest of the week, not to gamble, but to speak on internet law issues at a conference.
Fantastic. Sounds a good excuse for a party. But before you go, I wonder if we could detain you slightly. You've been looking, as I have, at this Scottish case over the Never Seconds blog. What's whet your appetite with that story?
Yeah, I call this story Blog Food Fight Puts Egg on School's Face. So those of you out there, our Tech Law 10 listeners, are thinking, Sinrod, what are you talking about? Well, here's what I'm talking about. As we know, the internet yields all sorts of disputes. And as Jonathan mentioned, we have this recent example. And in this one, we have a 9-year-old Scottish girl who was banned from posting photographs of what? School meals on her blog. And this relatively potentially mundane activity has caused a firestorm of criticism. According to BBC News, Martha Payne, who by now has had an excess of 3 million hits on her blog called Never Seconds, .blogspot.com, started posting photos of her Scottish primary school lunches at the end of April. In her blog, she had a foodometer in which she rated each meal in terms of its healthiness or not, and how many mouthfuls it takes to consume the meal. School officials became concerned about this, and ultimately a school council banned Martha from further posting of photos of school meals. These school officials, however, Jonathan, did not anticipate the fallout from the angry social media reaction to this ban. According to the BBC News, a Scottish education secretary even tweeted that he would be contacting the school council to overturn what he called the daft ban, and I'm sure you'll be able to tell Americans what daft means. And a celebrity chef tweeted, and he quoted in his tweet, "Stay strong, Martha," and he encouraged his more than 2 million followers to retweet his message. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding, you know, this relatively strong response, the school council initially defended its ban and asserted that all of the attention on the blog actually had caused food staff at the school to be concerned about their jobs. The council also stated that it believed that the ban made sense, and I guess this was their real point, because the photos on the blog represented only a fraction of food choices available to the students, so I suppose it potentially did not portray a fair representation of the food situation at the school. Yeah. Nevertheless, and I'm almost done, and likely because of the public pressure, the ban ultimately was lifted. And Martha, we would think, is pleased by how this turned out, because her original goal, Jonathan, was that her blog would help raise funds for what's called Mary's Meals Charity. And her target was to raise £7,000. We're not talking about pounds of food. We're talking about financial currency. And yeah. prior to the ban controversy, her blog had only raised £2,000. But after all the attention caused by the ban, she's actually raised in excess of £30,000. And she stated, Martha has stated publicly, that she's now raised enough money to build a kitchen in Malawi for children who receive Mary's Meals. So yeah. as I say, this was a messy food fight, but perhaps it has a happy ending. But I'm sure you'll have more incisive comments than me. What do you have to say, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right, Eric. The end result is marvelous, and there are kids who would not have been fed who are being fed because of this story. So that's, in my mind, the overriding good news. But I'm looking at this from the council's perspective, and if I were advising them, just as I advise other clients in how to handle social media, and I have to say, perhaps it's because of my long flight during the day yesterday, but I'm afraid I have very little sympathy, and I think the council, from an objective point of view, have taken a number of missteps. First of all, I think you don't take on a kid of her age. Because that's never going to have a happy result unless you do it very sympathetically. And I think they didn't. If you look at the council's own Twitter feed, you know, even their strapline says something like, "We only tweet during office hours, during emergencies." They talk about education issues, but there are spelling mistakes in their tweets. You know, that, frankly, in my view, is unforgivable. Twitter isn't something that necessarily is confined to office hours. And obviously, if you only staff during office hours and you have a prominent Twitter feed, you're always vulnerable to these type of things happening because the story had rolled before they had got hold of it. I have very little sympathy in them saying that it's the kid's fault for not giving a balanced view of all of the meals. She's a reviewer. She's a blogger. That is, frankly, in my view, a ridiculous thing to say. You don't say to TripAdvisor, you must objectively review every single hotel in the world, or you can't feature a selection of them. And frankly, I mean, if I was being very blunt, you can say I'm in a blunt mood today, that's almost like a drowning man clutching onto the last wooden plank of the lifeboat if they're criticizing the girl for not having objective review. She's under no duty to provide objective review. She's under no duty to review every single meal that they push out of the kitchen. And I think the other things that I would say is, obviously, in my view, it seems as if the council have failed to deal with the age-old story about different generations use media in different ways. This story obviously started off by somebody who isn't even yet Generation Y, and she was quite innocently, for the best of reasons, reviewing her school meals. She wasn't doing that maliciously. Her father had asked the school in advance and they'd got permission. If the school or the local authority wanted to have a policy on this, then they should have had one. When we do policies for clients and we do a lot of these things, we quite often say that you have got to involve all of the generations because people use social media in different ways. And the top of the organization may not even dream of ways in which the younger members of the workforce are using social media, so how can they deal with those risks? I've yet to do a policy where we've engaged 9-year-olds in the consultation, but surely if there was a situation like this, we would. And the policy should obviously say what can and cannot be said. There could be reasons for not allowing photographs, for example, because it might identify other children who are in a vulnerable position at the school. But the UK data regulator has spoken out on those blanket bans in the past. For example, some schools had an outright ban on photography on cell phones at school outings, school sports events, and the ICO said a blanket ban is unlikely to be justifiable. You've got to spend the effort and do a proper policy. And I guess my extra criticism would be the way in which they responded. As I say, they initially seemed to blame the child for all of this. Then, to his credit, the leader of the council fronted up and went on to a well-known radio program called The World at One, which, as it suggests, is at 1 o'clock. Obviously, this is whatever it is, four and a half, 5 hours into the story, rolling through Twitter. And to his credit, he did say that the policy was indefensible and he would therefore not defend it. And he said that he'd asked his officials 5 minutes ago or whatever to lift it. The interview's available on a number of media sites itself, and you can get it, I think, over BBC iPlayer if you're in the UK. It's an interview worth listening to, actually, because the interviewer starts off really quite hostile, then the guy confesses, and you can see the interviewer is slightly taken aback. But to the council's credit, once the story was moving, they did at least catch up with it. But whenever I've been with clients in these situations, you've got to run twice as quick if you let somebody get a head start on the news. I love that Winston Churchill quote, and I'm going to say it wrong, but it's something like, a lie is halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on. And that's undoubtedly true in social media terms, and probably the lie is more than halfway around the world, and even something that may not be a lie, but is at least not your version of events, can roll away with you. So my takeaway messages are, from an organization, from a corporation's point of view, You need to think through these events happening. You need to plan. You need to monitor social media. And you don't need to wait until the office opens up to reply, because by then you'll be coping with a media firestorm that's very hard to deal with. So I don't know whether that was insightful, Eric, but at least it was straight.
It was insightful. It was blunt. It was full of metaphors. We have the drowning man. I always call you the master of metaphor. And but truthfully, I do think your comments are correct. And we can certainly imagine far worse things that somebody could be putting on a blog than pictures of food. But before we conclude, you do need to define for the American audience what the word daft means.
Yeah, daft is a great word, I think. It's I guess it's probably a northern word. I'm from the northeast of England. Daft is a word that we'd use almost every day. I guess the nearest synonym would be dumb for an American audience. But daft is somehow blunter than that as well.
Well, when I was studying in London long ago, a Welsh girl once called me daft, so now I know it wasn't a compliment, so thank you, Jonathan. But anyway.
It sort of can be a compliment, actually. It's a very strange thing. Yeah.
Interesting. How about that?
As in, you're daft as a brush. So daft as a brush is a great expression, which is sort of you're a bit silly, but I like you.
That's very interesting. Okay, well, that makes more sense. And, of course, in our country, the new word for cool is sick. So if something's sick, that's really great. It's hard to believe. All right, well, this has been your Tech Law 10, probably more like Tech Law 14 this week. Hope you don't mind. We'll be coming at you weekly. As we do, please let us know your comments and suggestions for further podcasts. As you know, you can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm Eric Sinrod in San Francisco, at least today. I'm at ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. Jonathan, why don't you wrap it up?
Yeah, I'm jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. If you're coming along to the conference that I'm speaking at in Calgary, please come up and say hi. I'm sure Eric would say the same for his slot machine conference. Thank you for listening, and do tune in next week when we'll talk about some other exciting tech law topic.
Cheers. Thank you, my daft friend.
Thank you. Bye.